Welcome in to the Sunday edition of the Daily Tap. It is Sunday, May 6th. How is everybody doing on this still beautiful day in Milwaukee? The Brewers did get blown out, but that is okay. The sun is shining. We are living, breathing. Had a great brunch with my friend Zach Camino. Bartender did kind of charge me out of the blue for a beer, but we'll let that slide. It's okay. He was a nice bartender. It was a good time. The meal was fantastic. So I will not complain. I would go back. But yes, it's been an eventful Sunday. Like we said, the Brewers did fall. We're going to talk a little bit about Chase Anderson, a little bit about the Brewers roster, go a little more in-depth on the Brewers for Monday's show, as Monday will be a little light on content. Might have to squat on a few takes that I do have. But before we get going today on Sunday, SnowtapWI is where you can find us. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can also subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on Google Play and SoundCloud, Stitcher. Anything that you prefer, we'll hook you up. So excited to talk to you guys today, as always. Thanks for listening. The listens have been great. If you did not listen to the Becky Hammon pod yesterday and with giving some grades, I'd go back and listen to that, as well as a few other ones that we've had. We've had a really good week for listens. So if you've missed out for some reason, get back on the train sooner rather than later. All right, let's dive into Sunday. So the Milwaukee Brewers lost 9-0 in large part to Chase Anderson kind of cratering. The Brewers were down 3-0 after Anderson had given up multiple home runs, one to Adam Frazier, one to Jody Mercer, and then the wheels really fell off, and the Brewers just continued to give up runs as the game went on. And Chase Anderson has now given up 10 home runs. He only gave up 14 all of last season. Part of Chase Anderson's, you know, issues in the past had been the home run ball and that he was giving up a lot of them. And it looks like Chase Anderson is regressing back to the mean, that this breakout season he had last year, it was kind of fool's gold. And this was a big worry, I think, going into the season. Something we talked about, I personally felt like Anderson was going to be fine, like he had worked on some things, but you can just tell he's not locating pitches, like he's not painting the corner. I don't know if it's a Jet Bandy thing, I don't know if it's just Anderson struggling in general, that he can't really locate the pitches he wants, and that's allowing balls to leave the yard. So he's in a bad spot right now. I don't want to like overreact, but I feel like we have enough sample for this year to be like, Chase Anderson hasn't been that good. And it's part of the reason the Brewers are sort of struggling against these better teams. They're able to beat the, you know, lowly Marlins, Reds, Royals, what have you. But when you face decent teams, like the Pirates aren't great, but they're not bad either. They're an average, they're going to maybe win 80 games. And the Brewers lost 2 of 3, really could have won, you know, Friday if it wasn't for Junior Guerra. And so starting pitching was the issue. And if starting pitching's the issue, well, the Brewers need to figure this out. I mean, they're going to have a May that's full of good teams. They play the Indians for two coming up on Tuesday and Wednesday, big series there. Then the Rockies, then the Diamondbacks, the Twins, Diamondbacks again, and then the Mets. The Mets, well, are kind of struggling. They've lost 6 straight. But still, they have a very tough May ahead of them, and it could really change how we look at the season and if the Brewers need to make a move sooner rather than later for a starting pitcher, because you're not getting Jimmy Nelson back till the All-Star break, and we don't even know if Jimmy Nelson's going to be the same type of pitcher with that shoulder injury. So if Anderson continues to struggle, if Junior Guerra was fool's gold, who did not look like he did the last, you know, he was probably due for a bad start. I'm not going to base it off all of one start. But Chase Anderson has to be better. He's the quote-unquote ace of the staff. And if Anderson's missing, you know, the zone, it's not a good thing. And Anderson, you know, just really did struggle. And it's disappointing to see. And you hope that maybe it's going to be, the ship's going to be, you know, he's going to right the ship a little bit, because he definitely needs to. And he definitely needs to be pitching better. And the Brewers need more from their offense right now. Erik Sogard, I think, is done. I understand the Brewers gave Erik Sogard a lot of money this offseason. But I think Erik Sogard's time is done. I think the Brewers kind of gave him a last chance. I know that some fans were skeptical about why would you play him 3 straight games. They, I think, wanted to see it. They wanted to see, okay, if we get him into a rhythm, we get him some at-bats, he may put it all together. He still hasn't. He is a guaranteed 6-3 ground out, every time he steps up to the plate. And I don't know what the Brewers are doing. I mean, you have to, at this point, either cut him loose or figure a way to trade him, because Sogard just has no worth. I mean, Nate Orff, who is a journeyman himself in the minor leagues, has a 17-game hitting streak. Mauricio Dubon has a 23-game hitting streak. Now, he is coming to Milwaukee, but it's going to a team doctor to check out a knee strain. So Dubon might not be available for the Brewers, which is a really big shame. And if the fact that Dubon's out for a significant amount of time, he probably won't be to the big. You probably just have to call up Orff, who's been a journeyman and, you know, maybe not the most exciting player, but you scourge yourself by not. And I know it's like injuries happen, but it still makes you mad that it's like, if they would have, you know, pulled the trigger on Dubon a week earlier, you know, maybe he avoids this knee injury. So yeah, the Brewers have to do something. I get what the Brewers. I also don't really understand sitting Jonathan Villar for three games. Apparently, he's fine. Like, Jonathan Villar was hitting the ball pretty nicely. I get giving guys days off, but giving a guy an entire series off, did Villar, like, you never know. I mean, maybe he did something. Maybe he violated team rules, and instead of, like, saying, yeah, Villar suspended for the series, they just kind of sat him for the. They said, hey, you're going to have to take this series off or whatever. I don't know. Who knows what's going on there? But yes, Jonathan Villar, that made no sense to me as well. And then reports are that Stephen Vogt is apparently still dealing with a shoulder injury. He said a setback with the Sky Sox this week, and it doesn't sound good. It really doesn't sound like it's a good thing for Vogt and his shoulder. And it looks like Vogt may be out for a longer period of time than we expected. I think people thought Vogt could come back in the next couple of weeks and definitely provide some more offense to that catching position. But I do think that Jeff Bandy, again, another guy who I don't need to know how many times we can see Jeff Bandy fly out to left field or strike out. I think it's Jacob Nyhan's time to come up, and he did all right in his one game, just take his licks and be a backup. I think there's nothing wrong with bringing the young guy up. I think the Brewers have to do some of this. I get having veteran leadership, but when this veteran leadership isn't producing, you got to make a move. Now, they can make deals. Like, they don't have to call up the young guys, but if you have them and they're producing in AAA, I mean, why the hell not at this point? The Brewers definitely need a little more offense, that they're just not getting it from 1-9, and that's a problem. And you need the bottom of the order to pick people up. I mean, Domingo Santana struggles. Continue, Grant, he had a huge hit or a huge walk on, or is it a walk or a single? He basically started the rally in the eighth inning on Saturday. But the Brewers are very lucky that they didn't get swept in the series. So the Brewers now are just sort of this up and down team. They seem to be struggling on the weekends, at least in the last couple. So hopefully that trend changes. But the Brewers definitely get another day off, which is nice. They kind of have a couple here before this large stretch of games happens. And we'll see. And it's a tough stretch. It doesn't get easy for this team. And they're going to have to pick it up, because we're going to have a discussion tomorrow on, are we sure they're good? Because I don't know right now. I have no, the run differential, what things are saying, I don't know if this Brewer team is actually good right now. And we'll have that discussion tomorrow, though. We're going to move to the NBA. So NBA playoffs continue to go. I said this, I don't know if I said it on podcast or, you know, you just don't know. You talk to your friends and you podcast so much and you're like, did I say this on a podcast or was I just talking to a buddy? But like, the second round kind of bores me, because there are good games, but there's clearly an overmatching. Like, it's clear that we're going to get Cleveland, Boston, and we're going to get Golden State and Houston. Maybe the Jazz come out tonight and win the game and prove me wrong, and it's a 2-2 series. But Houston sort of laid down the hammer in Salt Lake City over on Friday, and Golden State did the same thing to New Orleans today. So, but really what we're talking about is the East, who both are at 3-0, which is kind of troublesome for the NBA. I know the NBA kind of has their set schedule, and hopefully they can work around it so we don't have a long, long time off for NBA games. But, man, LeBron James is incredible. I think the stuff that LeBron is doing, the runaway three, was stuff of legends. Like, I don't think we'll ever see something like that again. That was an all-time buzzer beater. Just an absolutely, absolutely great, great shot by LeBron. And LeBron definitely has he's the king of the castle right now. And you say that sort of metaphorically, but Toronto battles all the way back. They get a three to tie the game. And then LeBron hits this amazing, iconic runner that you're going to see time and again. 38 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds. He continues to just be an absolute beast in this series. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, his numbers, triple-double game 1, 43, 14, and 8 in game 2, 38, 7, and 6. I mean, his postseason average right now is 34 a game, nearly 35 points a game, 9 rebounds per game, 8 assists. He's not shooting very well from 3, only 30%. So I'll stay on conservation. So he's not even doing it from 3. He was a 6% better during the regular season. LeBron is beasting this playoffs. He is doing everything and more. I mean, what more do you want? I mean, are you not entertained? If he runs out of gas and they lose to Boston, no one can really shit on him because what he's done so far has been legendary. Now, you'd like to see him go all the way, and that's how narratives work, right? So the LeBron narrative is always going to be, you know, he's gotten to these finals, but he hasn't won all of them. I'd argue the competition is so much harder, and LeBron is such a different player than what Jordan was. There is now a real conversation for LeBron and Jordan. I don't like doing this, like, LeBron versus MJ, because I think they're different players. I think they are a different era. But we're finally getting to that point, that apex in LeBron's career, where we can have a legit, honest conversation. Do I think LeBron needs another championship? Yes, maybe 2. But at the same time, what he's doing at age 35 every night, putting the team on his back, is fucking unheard of. I hope everyone understands this. LeBron is willing this team to victory every night. Kevin Love was great. Sure, 21-16 is a great stat line, one of the better stat lines for Kevin Love in the last few months. And if Kevin Love gets his shit together, holy hell, the Cavs suddenly become a little bit of a wagon, as they say in hockey. And another team that is a wagon is Boston. I think that, you know, if you guys listen to Tapping the Keg this week, Mitch had this big rant about how Boston sure is depleted. Like, they're not depleted. And they continue to show it. I mean, Al Horford may be the most underappreciated guy in the league. He's an asshole, but he's a good asshole. I mean, that sounds weird. But he's a good player. He's a really good player. Al Horford is on another level. He had a great steal. I feel like this Boston team collectively, the players as well as the coaches, have gotten into these young guys' heads. You know, Ben Simmons has definitely, the narrative has shifted a little bit on Simmons. Same with Embiid. I still don't know why Embiid didn't foul Horford with 5 fouls in game 2, where he could have hammered him and at least made Horford earn it from the line to win the game for the Celtics. He could have done that. He didn't. I just think that Brad Stevens has coached Brett Brown into a pretzel. I think Brad Stevens is just showing off. And this is classic Brad Stevens too. And I said this at the start of the playoffs, and sometimes you just have to listen to me. I said, he loves being the underdog. Look at all these Butler teams, and it's like, I don't know if Boston's going to win. I don't know if Boston's going to get it done. And they do. I mean, and that's how it was with Butler. Every time we'd be like, man, is Butler going to actually win this again? Especially that second year when they didn't have Gordon Hayward and they had guys like Ronald Norad and others, where it was just like, are you kidding me? Like, how is this team winning still? Like, how are they? Every night it was amazing to watch Butler. And Brad Stevens continues to be the god. I mean, you can't discount anything they're doing. Terry Rozier, obviously, on another level. I want to see Boston, Cleveland. I want to see Houston, Golden State. I think both will be excellent. Excellent. Even though it's a repeat with Boston and Cleveland, I still think you're going to get a great series. I think Houston, Golden State is equally as good. And yes, there will be talk about, oh, the NBA doesn't have parity. Look at the NHL. It's going to be... But at the same time, I don't know if I'd want a Utah, New Orleans, or a Philly, Toronto. Like, why? That you want to see the best of the best. And I think you want to see these teams with notable stars playing in the biggest moments. That's just how it is. So if you don't like it, don't watch. But I know people are going to, because why wouldn't you? All right, I just want to, last thing, I'm such an idiot. Because, so... I decide that I'm going to bet on the Kentucky Derby. I usually talk about betting, but don't actually lay down bets. I usually sort of stay off and do this, and I'm sort of hearing things about my boy Jack, and I listen to part of my take, and Randy Moss is great. The NBC analyst is just great for insight, but he was all about Justified. He was saying Justified's a favorite. He's going to break the Apollo curse, and it's going to happen. So I didn't listen to that at all because then it started, it was a deluge. It was raining. And I'm like, man, this horse hasn't raced in like a year. It's going to be dealing with rain. Like, how is it going to handle it? It's only raced a little bit. And they said My Boy Jack was a mutter. And I'm like, oh, man, maybe My Boy Jack's going to do this thing. And I was like, okay, great. Like, and I liked Dior. I thought Dior's odds were good. Not realizing, and I knew I was fucked right when the race started. And I think it was Mike Tirico's like, yes, and My Boy Jack's odds have moved from 30-1 to 6-1. And I was like, fuck. I was like, oh no, this is bad. This is bad. And I just wish I would have just rode the favorite. Favorite doesn't pay good odds. I get it. But the favorite has won the last 7 years. Like, how much fun is that? Like, do we have to fix the Kentucky Derby odds so that the favorite doesn't win? Like, at some point, you're going to bet against the favorite and we're going to win. Because betting the favorite's not fun. Unless, as we just said, that is a way. If that horse is an absolute wagon, what Justified is. Like, Justified dominated that race. Like, that was an, like, Joel Embiid dunking on Aaron Bain sort of great. Like, Justified was amazing. That said, betting on the favorite stinks. You don't want to bet on the favorite. It's never fun to take the chalk. So, but whatever. We'll move on. We're on to the Preakness. As they say, we're 2 weeks. We'll see if we want to bet on Justified again or if we go other ways. Justified being the wagon may go against it. I don't know. I'll talk myself out of it. Or I know I'll figure out a way to probably bet against the favorite in 2 weeks. And we'll reconvene and I'll be like, hey guys, guess what? I bet against the favorite again. All right, so we'll get out of here. We'll be talking about the Brewers tomorrow. Who knows, maybe a little Packer talk if that. We'll try to scrounge up some things. It's a little bit of a dead pot time right now for sports because we don't have a lot of Bucks news. You know, the coaching stuff goes back and forth. Brewers, you can only do so much. And so I've started to sort of squat on takes. If there's stuff that you guys want me to talk about, I'm going to probably create a mailbox and we'll start taking some questions. But if you guys have ideas, you know, hit me up. SnowtapWI, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, just whatever is sort of on your mind. It doesn't even have to be about sports. It could be about Milwaukee. It could be about life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, whatever you prefer. So SnowtapWI, hit me up with those questions, guys, and we will talk tomorrow. All right, take care and have a good Sunday. Later.